All right, everybody, welcome into the show. This is Shell Shocked. Turtle here, joined, as always, my faithful companion, Jaquan. Here we are, man. It's Combine Week.
Yes, sir. Oh, wait, hold on. I got another call coming in. I got to take it. But no, yeah, I'm super excited about
how dare you? Talking right there about Whew, you had me nervous there. I almost had to go railing on you for 20 minutes like the douchebag in Washington, Chad Dukes. Washington, D.C.
Oh, man. I'm sorry. I couldn't help it. That was just so perfect to do. And somebody actually did that to him when he was taking calls about it, and he laughed about it. But, you know, it was too easy. When you said that to me, and I finally got around to listening to it today, oh, my God, that was...
Have you ever seen a grown man getting his feelings that badly?
No, not for 20-plus minutes, bro, no. I mean, I see somebody getting their feelings for like 3 or 5 and move on and say, you know, we'll talk about this since, you know...
Dude, it was a pre-recorded interview.
It wasn't even live. So I thought the second one was live, and the first one that he messed up was pre-recorded.
It was supposed to be pre-recorded. The second one was supposed to. He didn't tell Ian that it was live.
Oh, my God. Oh, that makes it that much worse. So you had time to fill in the gaps.
Right.
So
it's so
yeah.
And then to start disparaging him, like, Ian Rappaport's not the best name ever. Like, he's a famous guy because he covers the NFL, mm-hmm. but he's not the guy who's going to break anything. He's wrong almost as much as he's right. But for you to get him on and try to get him on twice means you were begging to have him on because you wanted your show to get more popular because you had a famous guy on. Everybody does it. We've done it as well. That's how it works.
Yeah.
But when he has to go and cover his job and you start crying, he's not that good anyway. Do you know how much of a vagina you sound like?
Yeah, that was bad. It blows my mind that it wasn't live. That takes it to a whole nother level because you had time, bro, to get it together and come up with something else. Oh, wow.
It's hilarious.
Let's not give him any more time. No more time for that guy. It was just so funny.
For his fan base that likes to try to say that our podcast is smaller, don't worry. Once the combine's done, we'll hit y'all back up and we'll let y'all know how the Redskins actually need to approach this offseason because I know you're not getting any good information up there. Hail to the Redskins, right? Let's see if you guys can actually win more than 8 games.
Yeah, and good luck with Alex Smith. Good job.
we'll definitely discuss that. Now, because if you guys aren't aware, I've got a new podcast that I started up yesterday. The first episode will be up later tonight on Thursday. It is called The Platinum Sombrero. And Jaquan, no answering, but to any of you football fans out there that can guess what that is, props to you. We'll give you a shout out on the show. See if you can get it without Googling. You're on the honor system. You need to actually be able to understand what this is. Pretty inauspicious, but okay.
Yeah, good luck with that. You know, people cheat. If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying.
Well, then you're dishonest. And if I find out you cheated, I will award you no points. And may God have mercy on your soul.
There you go.
So we're not going to do baseball today because I did almost 2 hours yesterday. And quite frankly, there's not a whole lot to talk about across the rest of the league outside of just me and my man crush on Shohei Ohtani, which is full-fledged. I will be the first to admit it. When that man hits his first home run, I will probably yell and scream. Even though he's not a Brave, that's my guy. I do want to mention one thing real quick. We're going to go to football, but I do want to mention one thing. And I was talking about this yesterday with Doc, my co-host on my new show. We were talking about Mike Trout and just how insanely good Mike Trout is. And that's not news to anybody. Jaquan, are you aware that in 6 seasons, really 5.5, he already has 55 WAR? And that's in Fangraphs, where their WAR is notoriously low. 55.
Yeah, I mean,
dude, that's Hall of Fame. Like, he could literally retire today and be better than like a third of the Hall of Famers.
He's ridiculous. I mean, there's no other words for him. I mean, ridiculous, freaking nature. You know, any superlative you want to throw at Mike Trout, I didn't realize he was that high. But you know what? When you say that, it doesn't surprise me because he's just that ridiculous. You could have told me 75, and I probably would have believed it.
Compared to his contemporary. Compared to Bryce Harper, who's his contemporary, same year and all that type stuff, came in the same league. Bryce Harper, 27.4 in his 6 years. That's not a bad number for 6 years. Like, just because I hate Bryce Harper, I'm not hating on him for that. That's actually a really good number for that short span of years. Clayton Kershaw, 34.
Wow. 55. Yeah, that's...
I said this yesterday. I really don't think that he's from this time. I think he's from the future, where everybody gets to genetically modify their bodies to look exactly how they want. He came back Terminator style to just take over the league. The part that I wanted to talk about, because we talked about that before, that's not what I wanted to talk about. Everybody knows he's a gigantic Philly guy. He's from New Jersey, right on the border over there. I am petrified that if he ever reaches free agency, that he will end up a Philly.
Yeah, I'll pump the brakes on that only because I think they are still too far away. Me personally, I know that they said the Philly system is getting better, but I don't think that the home ties will be enough for him to...
I hope not.
...to not have a realistic chance of making the postseason. Because for him, at this point, I think that's what it's got to be about for him.
I hope not. I really hope not. I hope he stays in. Yeah. If he doesn't come to Atlanta, stay in LA. Just do not come over here, because I can't hate you, because I've never seen a player in any sport that good. I really, truly, and honestly think if his health holds up for the rest of his career, he will go down as the greatest baseball player of all time. It's just unimaginable how good he is and the record pace he's on. But if I have to see him 19 times a year facing him,
yeah.
I don't know what he's I'll do. He's about the only guy I could look at and be like, Acuna's nothing compared to him.
Yeah, but he's going to have to go somewhere where he can. You know how baseball is. I mean, the Angels are in a big market, but they're still the Angels. And I'm sorry for all the Angel fans that listen to the show. But
all
you know
five
that
of them, because there's not many Angels fans.
Right, but he's going to have to go somewhere that's a premier destination and do what he's doing to get that moniker. I mean, I just, you know, it's very rare.
I don't care if somebody else gives him the moniker or not.
I'm just saying, in terms of having that universal laud and praise, I think he's going to have to do it for Big Team X that we expect to be there year in, year out in the running. You know, the only other person I can think of that we gave that kind of to was Tony Gwynn, because the Padres are still the Padres. But outside of that, it's hard. You know what I mean? It's hard not to be in a marquee baseball market and be that good and get that moniker. You can toil away, you know, somewhere that doesn't get that kind of recognition, and I don't think you'll get, you know, the props you deserve. Sometimes. So we'll see. I think he could. He has all the tools for what everything we talked about. I mean, dude's a stud. But I don't know if he can get that moniker.
He doesn't have a single weakness. Like, we say that about players. He doesn't have any weaknesses. He's good at everything. Mike Trout's not good at everything. He's great at everything. Like, he's top four or five at everything. It's I wonder.
It's ignorant.
I wonder if he ever struggled at anything in his entire life.
I don't know. I mean, no, I can't say that he did, because he's just a stud. That's the only word I can come back to. He's a freaking nature. I don't think he has.
I'm telling you, he is legitimately a creative player. He is the creative player on the show.
Yeah, and he seems so well grounded too. That it doesn't seem like it's gone to his head. You know, I mean, I'm sure he's got a little bit of arrogance, because I mean, how could you blame him?
It hasn't come off in any interviews.
You can't talk to him. It hasn't. And yeah,
I can't remember him ever charging the mound on somebody or doing the Carlos Gomez and launching a homer and just standing there watching it for a while. Like, I don't know I have never seen an incident like that. All I've seen is him being the hard-nosed, old-school type of player that all the old heads like you and kind of like me love. It's just incredible.
And no social media things.
Exactly.
And in the 24/7 social media, you don't see him, you know, cutting the fool at the club, starting fights, slapping chicks. Like, you don't see
six
any
baby
of that
mamas, so. None of that. He's got to have some skeletons somewhere. You can't be that perfect.
I agree, but I tell you what, he's doing a fantastic job. He must have a nest or something where you got a lock and key where you can't find them, because right now you can't hide anything from anybody. If they want to find out about you, they will go get it. So the fact that it hasn't come out with all the universal praise that he gets leaves me to believe there's just not a lot to be found in that cover.
That's insane. And I could talk about Mike Trout for hours just as a former player, just watching his game. But we got some football to discuss with the combine starting. Before we get to that, there's a couple things in the NFL I want to discuss real quick. My biggest one right now, I don't know what Hugh Jackson is doing. He was talking yesterday, I believe it was yesterday. I saw it on Roto World today, which means it was probably yesterday, about wanting a veteran quarterback to come in. We all understand. I get that. We all know who he's looking for. It's AJ McCarron. He doesn't want to start another rookie, even though by all indications, even though Dorsey said today that the first pick is up for trade, every GM will always say that to see if somebody's going to overpay. Is AJ McCarron really that much better of an option than Kizer, who I understand Kizer's rookie year was not great. 22 interceptions was really bad, But as much as some people like you don't like Deshaun Kizer, he did improve, and he showed significant improvement over the course of the season. Now, he still holds the ball too long, but my thing here is at some point you have to actually try to develop a guy. You can't just use him a year, oh, he didn't have a good year, throw him away. That's why they haven't had a stable quarterback since who? God, what? Eric Crouch?
Come on, man. Bernie Kosar, probably.
I think it's been 99 since they've had a quarterback that has been a starting quarterback for more than 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, no, I agree. And you know me, I was all on the AJ train. You know, I was going to print T-shirts and all that good stuff. But I also know that that's a figment of my hate for Andy Dalton.
Like anybody. I know that's half of the reason why you're on the AJ train.
Yeah, I know. I agree. But you know what? The thing about it is I just think AJ is a winner. He has... he has it. He has a moxie factor about him. He doesn't have the biggest arm. He's not the biggest guy. But I think if you put him in there, and the thing about it is Cleveland's not stable. But if you gave him some stability and an organization that would let him just go and fly, I think he could be a really good quarterback. I do. You know, I might come to rue that statement I make here on this show today. You know, in 3 or 4 years when he falls flat on his face, I could see that happening too. But I would be willing to give him a chance. I won't be willing to give him a chance at $20 million a year. Probably want to give him a chance at 15 and say, hey, now this is your starting job, or you can go try to somewhere else for less money or be somebody's backup and just be going from one situation to the next like you were with Cincinnati. So it's for this, like we talk about it, it's about value. I would take AJ at the right value and give him a chance because I think he could be a good quarterback, but I wouldn't give him, you know, Garoppolo money. No.
I mean, the thing that bringing up, I mean, talking like, with people around Cleveland and the Cleveland fan base and some writers for Cleveland, the rumor is, the murmurings and the whispers are that Hugh did not want Kizer anyway because he always wanted McCarron. So that whole pulling Kizer every half basically his entire rookie year instead of just letting him take the lumps and really kind of learn was kind of in part of sticking it to the ownership. If that's true, yeah. Hugh, you can't be that petty, man. You're 1-31 as a coach. Like that, you can't be doing that. And we talk about McCarron, and McCarron is a proven winner. He was a proven winner in college. Now, he did not win games himself. He was this is why I don't like the term game manager as an insult, because I wouldn't even call him a game manager because you literally plan games around him and not with him. At Alabama, listen, if you go back and you watch his games at Alabama, sure, he had some games where he put up some big yardage. Go back and actually watch those plays where he was getting those big chunk yardages. It is wide open Amari Cooper, wide open Julio Jones, 20, 30 yards down the field, wide open, to where it's almost impossible to miss, where you can just kind of float it up because a team bid on the play action. Because that was before Nick Saban went all spread it out, and that was when he was running the rock 75% of the time, and then he'd drop back and do a deep ball. If you're looking purely at the quarterback, Kizer has all the tools that you want in a quarterback. He's big, he's mobile, he's got an absolute cannon of an arm, he's a very smart kid. Obviously, he graduated from Notre Dame in 3 years. Very, very smart and bright kid. He has his warts, I'm not going to lie. I mean, he holds the ball too long. He's a little slow in his progressions, but that's the point where Hugh, who's supposed to be this big QB guru, that's the part. That's what you hired Hugh for. That's why. That's where he's supposed to make his money. And when I see him kind of acting like that with Kizer, it worries me that Hugh is a guy that I genuinely like. It worries me that he's a coordinator at heart and that he's never going to be able to actually handle being a head coach, because you got to put that crap aside. It doesn't matter if that's management's guy and you don't like your management. You got to win games, dude.
Yeah, but the thing about it is, just a couple of points. The thing about it is that he still got, you know, the perception that it will never be his fault because just the ineptitude of the Cleveland organization, right? So I think he has that in his back pocket of, I can pretty much do what I want because they're not really going to
play. I don't
want
to see him pull that card, man.
I hear you, but I think he has that car, and I think he's playing it. And to get you back real fast to AJ, for me, outside of those two pieces, the two games that stick out for me, when the Monday night where they went to Denver, and that first drive, he took them right down the field, and they scored a touchdown. They were in that game, and the defense blew it for them, and they lost. And when they lost Andy Dalton to the broken thumb, yeah, he threw a bad pick in that game, but he rallied back from it, and he put the Bengals back on top and had a position to win that game if you don't have, you know, Yes, and also the fumble by Jeremy Hill. So, you know, he put them in positions to win. He didn't wow you and he didn't blow anybody out. But when the chips were on the table and the game was on the line, to me, he still performed and he gave his chance, his team a chance to win. So I think those big games against, you know, that Denver team at that time and against that, you know, against the Pittsburgh team, when you can do that and you can put that on tape, I think that's what people that you say, oh, he's not the biggest guy, he didn't have the biggest arm, they see that and they say, you know what, well, but he still was able to, with that it factor and that ability to make a play when it needed to be made, keep his team in the game and give them a chance to win. And I think that's why you see people more than willing to give AJ a chance. I just don't think you can pay him that kind of crazy money at to say that. I don't think he's worth that yet.
At this point, I can't say he's anything more than Brian Hoyer.
Yeah, no. I think Brian Hoyer is a poor man. Jeremy Karen. I think
they've got the same things. They're about the same size. I think Hoyer is actually a touch taller. I mean, neither of them have big, strong arms. Hoyer actually has more NFL success than AJ McCarron. I mean,
yeah, but you've seen that playoff game,
right? And AJ's had some moments, but you have to.
Yeah, but he didn't have five pick moments in the playoff game, like in that Pittsburgh game. He didn't throw five picks.
No, I'm talking about AJ's had some good moments. AJ's had some good moments.
Oh yeah.
But it's all moments, and if he's not starting for a whole year, there's not a whole lot of tape. Defenders don't really know him. I would just be very cautious of ruining a quarterback who you thought highly enough of, your team thought highly enough of to take in the second round, who did show some very good traits as well as the bad ones in his first year, for a journeyman. Yeah. For a journeyman. That's the thing. Like, I get it if you were going for, let's say a Joe Flacco, somebody who's kind of middle of the road, but an established starter, or an Alex Smith. I would get it then. I would understand it. But you're talking about a guy and I'm not saying this to get you riled up, but you're talking about this for a guy that doesn't have any established success as a starter in the National Football League. He didn't have the same mantra that Jimmy G had as a backup. You know, it's one of those things where you're trading one unknown for another unknown, because you don't know if he's going to end up being Ryan Fitzpatrick, where he has a couple good games that make him $40 million.
Right, and that was my point. You're right. It is an unknown for an unknown, but you're right about the money, and that's why I temper with, I would give him a chance, but I would give him a chance of value at the right price. But again, he's blocked by, you know, and that's the two of the Ohio teams trying to make a trade that you all wanted to make, and you try to make it 5 minutes for the deadline, then you don't do the paperwork right, and then you don't give him a chance because Andy Dalton is what? He's Andy frickin' Dalton. He always struggles in big moments. So, you know, I that's why I won't kill him too much. It's that where you don't like them not giving Kaiser enough of a chance. I view it as they gave Andy too much of a chance, and it wasn't because AJ couldn't beat him out. I don't think they ever gave AJ any real chance to beat Andy.
I would agree with you there. I think Dalton's rookie year was so steady, and it's hard because Dalton's floor is so high. For as much as we give Andy Dalton a ton of grief, Andy Dalton is at least a known commodity. You know, in big games he may hurt you, but for the most part, he's not going to hurt you. He's kind of like Alex Smith when Alex Smith first came into the league. He's going to, for the most part, except for some reason, all those divisional games, he's going to, for the most part, avoid some of those turnovers. He's going to dump off if he has to, and he's going to try to take shots to AJ. So you kind of know, you at least know kind of what you're getting there, but you also know dang good and well that if your running game is not working, and it hasn't worked for the Bengals for, 3 years now, that Andy's not that guy to put you on his back.
Right, but you just said it. But you pay a quarterback to be big in big-time games, and I say it all the time, people laugh at me. Andy Dalton is fantastic Sunday at 1 o'clock, okay? But if it's Monday at 8 o'clock, if it's Sunday at 8 o'clock, if it's Sunday at 4 o'clock, if it's Thursday at 8 o'clock, he's trash. But you're paying that money to a starting quarterback to be excellent in those games. I'd rather be excellent in those games and struggle a little bit more on Sunday at 1 than vice versa. So, you know, not to derail it, to get it down on the Andy Dalton train, but in terms of him and AJ, that's why I said, you know, I would give him a chance at the proper value. That's my only point.
I would agree. I mean, if you can get him at 7 to 10, maybe, but that's a hard ask when you're talking about a starting quarterback. I mean, I don't want to make this a Cleveland podcast, so I'm going to move off of this one real quick. It's going to be one of those things that's going to bug me until it happens. Couple more things in the NFL. One, did you see Kirk Cousins is like flirting with the Vikings? Could you imagine a better fit for both Mike Zimmer and for Kirk Cousins?
No, I think that is a match made in heaven if they can get it the money to work out. He's got a good cast around him. He's got a really good defense. I read that and I said, that's where I would have
I don't want to see it in the NFC.
It just was crazy.
Yeah, I don't. No, thank you. I don't think Kirk is anything. Like, I don't think Kirk is special. I think Kirk is just below. If I were ranking him, he's not Philip Rivers, but he's like kind of in that same tier of being good. He can have spurts where he's really good. That's where I think him and Philip are different. Rivers is consistently really good, just not great. I think Kirk is good, occasionally really good. But you give him Thielen and Diggs and Kyle Rudolph and a healthy Dalvin Cook and that defense, that is a monster matchup. And to me, that's a much better option than these idiots thinking that you should trade a first round pick for Nick Foles. But if that happens, look out rest of the NFC, because that's a quarterback that's not going to take a lot of dumb chances. He's going to actually have consistent receivers who can actually win on the outside. I'm looking at you, Terrell Pryor. And that Minnesota team is going to do well, depending on – and Kirk being from Michigan State, so you know he can handle cold weather. So it's not like, oh, well, how's he going to handle it up here? He's already done that, and he did it very well in college. I hope I don't see it.
Ohio boy.
As a Falcons fan, I don't want to see it. As a Falcons and a Lions fan, I really don't want to see it at all. But the football fan says, man, that's the perfect match of the offseason.
I agree. And you see that they already hesitated because you saw Zimmer come out and say that Bradford has a degenerative knee. So you can go ahead and take him out of the equation for them trying to build anything.
Bradford has a degenerative everything.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, when you start taking shots at your quarterback that you just had on your roster the year before and they're all free agents, you just took one off the table. Pretty much, if you're Zimmer, if you read between those lines, and not really reading between the lines, just reading the lines.
Right. If you're the Jets or the Redskins, this opens up some weird avenues, though, because if you're the Jets, do you go after Bridgewater? Because if you bring in Kirk Cousins, you're most likely not bringing back Bridgewater. You're probably not bringing back Keenum because he's going to be overpriced.
Mm-hmm.
Would you, if you're the Jets, would you try to get Bridgewater? Would you try to sign him?
I would look into it, but also Keenum as well, because if you start playing out the dominoes,
here's the thing.
Cousin goes to Minnesota.
I don't want to cut you off, but the thing with Keenum is my same thing with Nick Foles. Don't be fooled by 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
You have six years of actual data on a guy. Don't throw it away because one of those years was really good and the other five was awful. Don't forget that this is a dude that couldn't get playing time with Jeff Fisher in St. Louis. Just don't forget that. I'm just saying.
No. I know. I'm not saying. No, I agree with that. I'm just saying I'm talking about where the dominoes fall. If we say, okay, Cousins goes to Minnesota and you do that. If you're Denver, do you spend big money on Keenum? I wouldn't. Even if I was the Jets, I wouldn't. I would take a chance on Bridgewater. So I don't know if Keenum gets big money somewhere. I mean, Garoppolo's already re-signed in San Fran. Does Arizona go after Keenum and give him big money?
I think Denver would be more likely to go after Keenum. I think they would try to go after Bridgewater, but I think they'd be more likely landing spot for Keenum or Bradford. Because they're not going to start Trevor Siemian. And Siemian is a guy that they can feel comfortable with as a backup, and they're pretty much just giving up on Paxton Lynch. I don't see a fit for Kirk Cousins going there. You're trading two good receivers over there for a completely horrible and inept line and a very inconsistent run game. So I don't see that happening. I don't think it would be Bradford. I think that would feel too much like the Mark Sanchez experiment, even though Bradford is much better than Sanchez. I think Keenum is a name to watch there. I think the one thing I wonder about on Bridgewater is our team's going to be too nervous because of the knee, because he didn't get back in and play anything. So he didn't get to show you anything. If I'm the Jets, you've got nothing to lose. I don't think it would preclude me from taking a quarterback if the guy that you like, that you feel can be a good quarterback, drops to you. But I think Bridgewater would be a great guy, because even if he's not back to what he was before, you feel he's a guy that could stopgap, same as Keenum, until a guy like Lamar would be ready. Or, God forbid, a Josh Allen were ready. Because there's really only one or two quarterbacks, and really only one who I feel could actually step in right away, and that's Rosen. And I don't feel like Rosen would have a great rookie year. I just think he's the one that could step in right away and actually start. It's an interesting dilemma. I will be paying close attention to see how that unfolds, because that's three former starters and one backup who everybody thinks should be a starter on the market at the same time in a class that's not particularly deep at quarterback. So it's some interesting dominoes when there's not a lot of teams that really are looking for their starting quarterback. You know the Patriots need a quarterback. I wonder if they would take a chance on Keenum. He would seem like a guy that could fit there, or Bridgewater, something like that. I don't know. It's something interesting. If I get dragged down that rabbit hole, I'll be down there all day. And I do have one more point on the NFL to get to before we go to break. Did you see the thing with Gronk where supposedly he was considering retiring?
They said that it was The Rock and was it Arnold Schwarzenegger? Was it
telling him to get into Hollywood?
Get into Hollywood, yeah. And I think that could be a good move for him. I mean, he's got the personality for it. And, you know, before he gets too beat up to actually do those action movies, I mean, it's crazy. And the other story about, you know, the reporter doing the story about him changing his diet and going to the TB12 and the Patriots trying to kill the story, I also found really to be interesting as another, you know, that another divide there between them and Tom Brady when they're trying to kill the story about their star tight end trying to use their star quarterback's training method. Like, they tried to kill that story. I was surprised that got out like that. I was like, man, now, what's going on in New England?
I should say that there's already been some reports that Gronk is fully expected to play again this year. But when you start having that seeds of doubt, you're going to start having it pretty much every year. You're going to start talking about it. And as good as Gronk is, he's been injured a lot. And it's not just been light injuries. It's been back surgeries. It's been arm surgeries. He's been dinged up pretty bad. Now, when they say go Hollywood, I don't think he could be another Rock because he's a fun-loving guy. He is an ogre. He is a meathead. He is not smart at all. And I really don't think it's an act. I think he really is just that dumb. Me Gronk, me catch football. I really think that's him. I really, really do. I think he's that lovable idiot. And everybody needs one of those. So he could have that thing. I don't think he'd have a real problem. He's not going to win any awards acting, but I think he would basically play the party guy in that role. And I think he'd be fine with that because he's not really playing. That's just him.
Yeah. No, yeah.
For goodness sake, he drives around on a bus in the offseason with his family, with his brothers, his meathead brothers, and that's all they do. He's got tons of money because he's actually very thrifty. He doesn't spend his contract money. The only money that he spends, he's been living off the signing bonus money and his endorsement monies. He still has every bit of his NFL contract money.
Yeah. Well, then you can't say he's too stupid, Dan, because, I mean, you can have people around you to advise you to do the right thing, but if you're stupid,
because that means he's drinking like the, he's so dumb that he's drinking like the $20 bottle of vodka.
You're so stupid.
It's the same job.
I'm just saying, we see stupid people, and you can have the greatest people around you, and they can tell you to do this with your money, and it's the right thing to do. But if you're dumb, and you see, ooh, I need that car, me, Gronk, need that car. I mean, you got to give him a little bit of credit for that. So I'm not going to kill him too much, because if he's still living that way, I mean, it takes a little bit of smarts to do that. I mean, it just takes smarts.
I think his mother probably has all of his bank account passwords, and he can't guess them, so I think that's probably why.
We hit same key.
Oh, man. Go to break.
I'm going to take a break. When we come back, you got Saquon Barkley doing Saquon Barkley things, and no one is shocked. One other running back, though, really taking a big step at the combine. Stay tuned through the break. We'll be right back here at Shell Shocked.
You go to a team like that, and obviously they had some rough years, but I think they're a couple pieces away. They do have a lot of young talent, bringing in a new offensive coordinator. They are a good team. If you look at the schedule, obviously they won one game, but they were in a lot of games. So you want to be part of something like that. That's something bigger than yourself. That's something that you leave a legacy, being part of something special.
I can be your hero, baby. I can kiss away the I will stand by you forever. You can take my breath away.
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for sticking with us through the break there. As I said before, Saquon Barkley is doing Saquon Barkley things. And if you're a follower of us, that means you're a big-time college football nut. So you know the combine has started. Weigh-ins were Wednesday and today, along with some of the bench presses today. The actual on-field activities start tomorrow. It's a pretty good birthday present for me. Monday is mine. But
okay.
I don't want it doesn't count anymore. I'm past the age where you get a year older, so I just don't like to announce the age anymore.
Oh, goodness. You stop.
Saquon Barkley I honestly thought they were lying when they said that what he would weigh in at, because Walter Football, congrats to Walter and Charlie. They do a phenomenal job every single year. They hit this one almost perfectly. They listed him at 6 foot, 230 pounds. Saquon measured in 6 foot, 233 pounds. This is a dude that you see break away from everyone when you see make lightning cuts, and he weighed in at 233.
Mm-hmm. That
is foolish. That should not be possible to have those type of moves and that type of juice in your legs and be that heavy. That's heavier than Adrian Peterson was coming out. That's heavier than anybody besides, let's see, outside of like Michael Turner and Brandon Jacobs. That's almost as heavy.
Tell me about Saquon.
That's almost as heavy as Leonard Fournette was a year ago.
Yeah, I mean, Saquon is ridiculous. Like I said, you don't have to tell me. I saw it. You know, I remember sitting in the hotel room in Tampa, getting ready to go to my boy's 40th birthday party, trying to catch as much of the game as I could for it. And the opening kickoff goes to Saquon, and he takes it to the house against Ohio State. And I'm sitting there like, oh my God, we are in
trouble. He gets in that open field, and it's like he gets even faster. Like like people take good angles on him, and he still just blows by him. It's stupid. And all that said, so they do the bench press, and what's a good number for a running back? 18, 19, somewhere around that range?
Yeah.
If you can get to 20, that's really good. Saquon put 29. Yep.
29. If everybody that like to listen to us, and we talked about it, I believe at the beginning of college football season, where he had that video out where he was killing the squats. I think he was squatting like 500 or something crazy, and he was just going nuts on it. I don't hold me to that number, but it was a really big, ignorant number that he was just breaking out in that video. So a piece of me is not overly surprised that he put 29 up.
Dude, but 29 shocks me.
Put up 29.
29 absolutely shocks me. For a guy that is that shifty and elusive, 29 is insane. Especially when you see guys like on the other end of the spectrum, Bo Scarborough only got 14.
Mm-hmm.
Or 13, I believe you said. 13?
Something too low for a guy his size.
For a guy that weighed in at 230 pounds. He only got like that's pathetic. Now he has longer arms, so you can kind of get away with that. My boy Rashad Penny, you know, I sing his praises all the time, so I'll say his detriment. 14 on the bench press, not what I was looking for from him. But Saquon obviously in the lead with 29, not by himself though. And this won't come as a shock to anyone that listens that is here in Georgia. Nick Chubb ties him with 29. And if you want to know one thing, I'll bet you more than anything, Nick Chubb is pissed that he couldn't get to 30.
Yeah, absolutely. He wanted it by himself. And I wonder, I didn't see the order. I wonder if he knew that 29 was the number to get and he couldn't get to 30 or if he went first. I don't know who went first. That'd be interesting to see because he's really competitive. But we talked about it. And that does nothing but help his stock. You know, and like you said, it depends on what he runs. But 29 is a good start for Nick Chubb.
And we said we were talking before the show started. I really do. If he runs under a 4.55, Nick Chubb will be a second round pick. I do think he'll run. I think he'll run a 4.51. He's a lot faster than people think. He was a very, very good track and field athlete at Georgia. Him and Sony Michelle both, who. Sony himself got 22, so you can take your Alvin Kamara comparison and shove it because Kamara ain't getting 22. But Nick Chubb weighed in really, really well at the combine. He measured in a little bit over 5'10, which is good size, at 227, which not that shocking when you look at him. He looks like a bowling ball. And just like Saquon setting people off with his big squats, I mean, that's all Nick Chubb has done since he's got to Georgia is see gigantic postings of him squatting 500, 600 pounds, just being a man-child. Do you know what Nick Chubb did, though? He didn't go to one of these combine prep places. He didn't go to, like, the IMG Academy type places. You know what he did?
Probably pulled tractors or something crazy.
He went back to his high school, just like he did on spring break. He went back to his high school to work out there and get ready for the combine. Nick Chubb is like, he's like the most unassuming stud football player of all time.
And I just Googled it. It was 495 for Saquon in that video I was talking about. I knew it was a ridiculous number. But yeah, to go back to high school, he just seems like one of those, like you said, down-to-earth, just solid-earth kind of dudes. Unassuming, but he's super competitive. He just goes about his business. You know, like, I root for Nick Chubb. I'm not a Georgia fan, but I root for Nick Chubb. He just
seems like
a really class act. He's a class act kind of guy, and I'm glad for him still trying to get over that injury. That's a big, big step.
Unless you're a disgusting Tennessee fan, you have to root for Nick Chubb. I mean, there's literally nothing he's ever done that make you hate him. Like, he doesn't show you up when he runs you over on a big run. He gets up, hands the ball to the ref, and comes right back to the huddle. Every once in a while, he'll jump up on the teammate, but he doesn't, like, spike the ball at you, get in your face, or none of that. It is really cool to see in this era of overly flamboyant celebrations. And don't get me wrong, I'm not, get them off my field. I like some celebrations. Some of them are awesome. But in an age like of Odell Beckham, where lifting your leg and acting like you're pissing like a dog is a funny one, which I thought was stupid. Like that type of flamboyance, Nick Chubb just goes, does his job, and does it better than a heck of a lot of other people. So if he goes through and he runs a low 4.5, or heaven forbid, runs into the high 4.4s, he's going to skyrocket up boards. Now, it wasn't all good for the running backs. I was a little bit shocked that Darius Geis came in as weak as he did, because he doesn't have long arms. 30-inch arms for Darius Geis, which is shorter than Michelle's and Nick Chubb's, and barely longer than Akram Wadley's. And Geis only got 15. Now, that's not a horrible number until you see that Geis weighed in at around 220 or 225 pounds. You need to see a little bit more from a guy who doesn't have a single real trait that stands out on its own on tape, and the guy that we're kind of questioning his speed for as well. I was really hoping to see 18 to 20, and it doesn't seem like it's that big of a difference. It's a big difference.
No, agreed. He needed to come and show and have a really good underwear Olympics, and that's the opposite side of the spectrum from, you know, Chubb and from Barkley. That's not a good number from somebody that had the billing he had coming to the season. It just seems like he's on a downward slope.
He has gradually kept sliding since the injury and since he came back and the new offense, which did not fit him very well at all. It exposed a few holes in his game, particularly receiving wise, because he didn't have a lot of receptions. Some of it's on the quarterback, of course, but there were quite a few drops by Geis as well that were just bad. But it wasn't all just running backs. The offensive linemen were lifting as well. And Will Hernandez is a Hulk. 37 reps. He actually came in 15 pounds lighter for the combine. He was at 340 when he was at the Senior Bowl. Came in at 325 and just put up 37 reps on the bench. He's a guy who's probably going to move laterally really well. He's going to be slow, but all linemen are slow. That dude, he's going to make himself some money, because at this point, we're talking about guards and centers, really, but the interior lineman, it's Quentin Nelson. As far and away number one, he got 35 today. Also very shocking in a good way. He actually measured out with arms that were over 33.5 inches, which puts him above the threshold for tackle. So there's going to be a team that takes Quentin Nelson and plays him at tackle, I guarantee you, which I think he'll handle phenomenally. But outside of Quentin Nelson, it is Will Hernandez and Isaiah Wynn. And I don't remember a year like this, as much as we rag on some of the skill position depth. The interior line, this may be the deepest interior line we've seen in a long, or at least the most top heavy, because there are four interior linemen right now that could conceivably go in round one. And that's Quentin Nelson, Will Hernandez, Isaiah Wynn, and Billy Price from Ohio State, who everybody was excited to see bench, because all I'd heard was he was going to break everybody's record, that he's strong like an ox. And you would know it more than I would, but I didn't see it as much on film. So I was interested to see what that number would be. But he got hurt today, hurt his left pectoral, which is not a good sign. You could pretty much guarantee that if it is a torn pectoral, he'd drop out of the first round, because the thing on Billy Price was that he could come in right away and play. But, you know, if a team scoops him up late second, early third, that's still a great pick. And I actually feel second round's a better spot for him anyway. I did have a few concerns with him, particularly with his feet. I felt like he could get out of whack with his feet and his hand punch and not being fully set. Not that I'm saying he was bad. I still think he was really good. But it's a good class for the offensive lineman, for the interior lineman.
Yeah. And Hernandez has just been, you know, his stock has been just trending up, and up. And he didn't do anything to kill that. I'm an Ohio State fan. Everybody knows this. Listen to the show. You talk about Billy Price. If you look at a lot of those runs, and then the zone read has been in the middle. And that's been a lot of Billy Price opening those holes. The problem for Ohio State was on the offensive line has been to tackle. With Michael Jordan on the outside and just not developing into the guy they thought he was going to be. So the interior, he actually is really good. If you go back, I know you haven't watched as much as I have, but those inside runs were a lot of, you know.
Oh, I know he's really good. My problem was when they were saying that he was going to put up 40 and 45, I didn't see that type of strength when I was watching video.
Oh, well, I don't know about 40 or 45. I didn't hear that. That's just an ungodly number. But I feel bad for him because if he tore his pec, I mean, that could be a year. That could be. It most definitely is a year,
especially for an interior lineman where every punch is inside, is supposed to be inside the numbers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I feel bad for him. That's an unfortunate break.
As good as it is for the lineman, though, the tackle class, man, there are a few that were not so good. And it's not looked at as a good tackle class. This could be one of the first years where there isn't a tackle selected in the top 15 or top 20 picks. There really isn't one deserving. Mike McGlinchey from Notre Dame, maybe. Which is a weird story because he was looked at as being almost as good as Quentin Nelson. He was almost verified a top 5, top 10 pick at the beginning of the season. He's going to struggle to make the first round now, and he probably will because he has left tackle experience. I didn't see his bench, but he was a giant of a human being, 6'8 and 3. I believe he measured at 6'8 and 308, something like that. A little bit down from what you want to see, honestly, but looked trimmed up. Trey Adams is another name. He got hurt, so he's probably not going to be in the first round conversation this year. He tore his ACL, and for a big guy, that's a little bit more. Got to be a little bit slower and careful coming back from that than one of the smaller guys. You got Connor Williams from Texas, who tore his meniscus. He came back and played late in the season, skipped the bowl game. He measured in under 300 pounds. He measured in at 296, which is not ideal. But
no.
But his bench press was not as bad as a lot of people were thinking it would be, because the story on him is that he's not really strong on tape. He gets beat a lot by power rushers. And he actually put up 26. That's not a great number for a tackle, but that is most definitely in the acceptable range. That's not good. That's not bad. When you're talking about people with arms, and they were wondering about his arms, he was over 33 as well, so he's right at that threshold. 26 is an okay number there, especially for a left tackle, where you generally don't have to be that big giant mauler like you do as a right tackle. It's okay to be a little bit more finesse. It makes me a little more worried now, though, that none of that strength showed up on tape.
Right.
I wonder, is he workout strong or is he actual strong? And there's no better example of that this year than Orlando Brown, who was the biggest wah, wah, of the entire combine, as one of the biggest men I've ever seen at a legitimate 6'8", weighed in at 345 pounds. He probably played during the season more like 365. 13 bench reps.
Oh my God, dude! Don't even participate. I'd rather you say, "Hey, you know, I hurt my rotator cuff. I can't bench today." If you know you're gonna go out there and do 13, and actually go out there and say, "Yeah, I'm healthy, y'all," and do 13, that is unforgivable. Like, what have you been doing? If you just have trained since the end of the season till now with anybody reputable with that kind of size, you should be able to do more than 13.
And this is a dude who everybody already knew you were gonna have to move to right tackle because he's not a good pass blocker. His only hope was going to be the run blocking. And if you're only throwing up 13, everybody's going to go back and dissect his entire tape every single play now. That could cost himself that. He wasn't really considered first round unless there was a team that really, like, unless there was a run on tackles and the team really just needed one. Like a team like Seattle may have taken a shot on him or something. But you're talking about now, he might not just slip to the second round. He might slip to the middle or the back end of the second round because he's not a guy that you could play at left tackle. He's not. If he's not strong enough, you're going to have to almost give him a redshirt year just to get him strong.
Yeah, no, I agree. You said it back in a second. To me, that drops down into the third, fourth round where you're like, okay, for that point, he's coming in to be a swing tackle at best. So like you said, redshirt's like getting stronger. I'm not spending the second round pick on somebody like that. Not me. I've seen it happen with my Bengals, and that's why our run game stuff.
It only takes one team, so somebody, he won't slip that fall because he was a starting left tackle at Oklahoma for a team that put up a ton of points, albeit very quick passes, but some team will take a shot. I just think now he's going to cost himself probably $5 or $6 million.
I agree. That's, 13 is just an obscene number and not in a good way.
I mean, he was getting beat up by running backs that were literally more than 100 pounds lighter than him.
Right. That's embarrassing.
And he had the long arms, over 35-inch arms, so that does contribute. But that doesn't take you from where you should be when you're a mauler like he is, but you should be at the 30 to 35 number for a guy like him.
To
13, you cannot explain away 20 bench reps. That is obscene, and that is the worst showing from the combine today. We're going to get to our wide receiver rankings here in a second. I have one more question on the combine for you. Mm-hmm. Sam Darnold, he's going to show up and do all the athletic drills. He's not going to throw. Does that bother you?
Right. No, because it's a trend that a lot that the quarterbacks don't want to throw at the combine. They want to throw at their pro day with their wide receivers that they know, so they don't have those timing issues. So I'm more surprised to hear a top quarterback say they're going to throw than I am when they say they're not going to throw, because that's just what they've been doing here recently. So for me, that's not necessarily a red flag. That's just what they do.
See, I'm on the other end of that, because in this class, no quarterback is really separated from the other. And you can say Sam Darnold's the favorite for number one because Josh Rosen said, hey, don't pick me, Cleveland. And that's really about it. And he measured in well. He measured in at 6'3", 6'4"-ish. Measured in pretty well. The problem is there's a lot of questions on his footwork. And obviously, if you're going to have bad footwork, you don't want to show it there at the day. But when you're talking about all the quarterbacks being that close, to me, I don't like that move, because no quarterback has ever been dinged at the combine for not being on the same timing with receivers he doesn't know. Every scout, now people that watch will ding them, every scout that's there understands these aren't his wide receivers, these aren't his plays, he doesn't know how these guys are going to react to routes. They all understand that. They're not looking for that. They're looking to see how the ball comes out. They're looking to see where you place the ball in relation to where that route is supposed to go, and they're looking to see your footwork. You saying you're not going to do any of the footwork and throwing drills, that's weak to me, because Sam Darnold was not in pro sets a whole lot this year. He was in it more than some of these others and more than a lot of college football, but not enough to where anybody's confident in his ability to drop.
Yeah, but I still go back to the fact that precedent has been set over all these years where, you know, the quarterbacks that whether they separate themselves or not, but the ones that are in that, you know, they're going to be the top quarterback or top three quarterbacks taken, a lot of them go that route of, I want to control the environment, I want to throw to my guys, I want to do this, I want to run the script of the route tree that we use, and they can't do that at the combine. So I'm, you know, I don't kill them for it. I'm with you. I want somebody to be competitive and go out there and say, I don't care, I'll throw to, you know, the junior varsity team down the street if you just give me a chance to. But that's just not what they do here in recent history. So for me, it's not a break of the norm. If he was doing that and everybody else was throwing and had been throwing the past couple of years, you know, 5 to 10 years really, then I would be like, okay, come on, man, that's weak. But given the fact that you know, precedent has not only been set, but it's almost been expected at this point, it's not going to knock him to me or to many people on the draft board. They're going to say, okay, I'll wait for your pro day, because that's what we've been trained to do pretty much now.
It just seems it's always the guys with the questionable arm strength that do that.
No, but a lot of times they do that. If you go back and look at it, a lot of the top quarterbacks don't really throw at the combine. They'll come measure, they'll come do the agility, they'll come do the running, but they don't really do the throwing. They almost always do the throwing at their pro days.
All right, final thing before we get to our wide receiver rankings. What's your best guess on what Lamar Jackson runs the 40 in?
Ooh, man. Oh, I don't know. I hadn't thought about it. I mean, I know it's going to be fast. I don't think he goes above 4.4. I think he's right around that range. He's going to float.
I think he's going to be a 4.37, a 4.4,
okay,
4.41 or 2 at the highest end. Didn't Mike Vick run a 4.25 or 4.35, something like that?
I don't know off the top of my head. So yeah, let me readjust that, because running a sub 4.4 is ignorant. Maybe 4.41. I think Lamar is going to blow people away with his speed, and I like it, but I hate it.
I mean, measuring in at 6'2", he's the same size as some of the receivers, so I guess he's good for his position change.
Right, and that's why I'm not going to like it. It's good, but it's going to fuel more that he should change positions, which I hate.
It's one of the stupidest things, and anybody that's actually watched the kid play and broken down the tape knows that.
Yeah, but when you get these idiots on TV to keep talking about it, and so-called guys that have been, you know, in those positions, your Bill Polians of the world that come out there and say that.
4.36, by the way, for Mike Vick. 4.36 in rookie camp in 2001. I would love to see if Lamar can beat that. He measured in like 212 pounds, so he's a little bit lighter than what you want. I just don't want to see him get Robert Griffin, so I'll be excited to watch that. Now, we got to move on from that, because if we keep going, we're going to kill our time clock again. So,
yep.
This one's a little bit different. We're going to combine two positions this week. We're going to combine wide receivers and tight ends. And I said that the wide receiver pool wasn't all that deep this year and that I might struggle to get five. It's a little bit better than I previously thought when I sat down there and really looked at the names. I still don't think that there are really any super stud wide receivers in this class. I don't see anybody that I think is dominant number one. there's a few that can be number ones in the NFL, but there's none that like stand out to me as you know, like a Julio Jones or an AJ Green type in this draft. That said, most people go something like this, and this is their rankings, not ours. Calvin Ridley, number one. He's kind of the unanimous number one. He measured in at 6 foot, 184 pounds. He's very slight build. Very, very slight. That's the difference between him and Amari Cooper. Amari Cooper wasn't necessarily heavy, but he's built a lot thicker, and we talked about this a little bit. That's what worries me about Ridley, because I need to know that if you're on the outside, that you can, one, you can beat press. Two, I got to know that you can come across the middle on your crossers and survive the hit. And Ridley is a superb route runner, very clean. Very, very clean and polished routes, catches the ball well, catches it away from his body. He'll have the occasional focus drop or two, but more of his struggles were because of the quarterback situation in Alabama than it was Ridley himself. And I think Ridley will come out and be very good. I just wonder whether he's really ever going to be able to be a true number one unless he really puts on about 20 pounds of weight.
Yeah, but his ability is route running. I mean, not to say he's that, this guy, but Could he be Antonio Brown?
Ooh. I haven't seen anybody compare him to Brown yet. It's kind of different types of players. Brown, as small as he is, Brown does not shy away from contact. Brown is very physical at the beginning of his route and at the break of his route tree. He's not he's just not very tall. Ridley, Sterling Shepard maybe might be a comparison for me right now, maybe a better version of Sterling Shepard.
That's what I'm thinking. That's what when I look at it, it's just like you said, he's fluid in his route running, has good hands, has good speed.
And he's going to run fast. He's going to be 4.4, yeah. Maybe a touch under 4.4. So he'll be in that Sterling Shepard, maybe that D.D. Westbrook class. But D.D.'s not a guy that I ever expect to see as an outside receiver. So maybe a Golden Tate, maybe, but Golden Tate's pretty thick too. Golden Tate's a 215 guy.
Right. So I was trying to find somebody with the hands, the route running, that build. I mean, not saying that's who he is now, but I mean, in terms of could he ascend to that in terms of his stature and his ability on the field. I mean, listen, if he gets Antonio Brown, you're going to be hit a home run, get a raise to the GM for taking him, right? But if I'm looking at some where he could be, just given, you know, his stature and his ability, I mean, that's
Brandon that's Cooks, maybe?
Yeah, but I think Brandon Cooks is more of a one-trick pony. Brandon Cooks is a go deep. He's a nine. Run that nine route.
I don't really have a straight up comparison because I think he has better hands than Sterling Shepard.
Yes.
But I think that's the closest I can get to him as far as that. Because I don't think he's not as dynamic in the open field as OBJ. Not like Christian Kirk, who's also up there on this list. And Christian Kirk is a guy. Now, by the way, I do have Ridley as my number as. I think I've probably got him in my number two, and it's literally just for the weight. If he was heavier and I was more convinced that he could take shots, I would have him higher. I just think he's going to run into a lot of injury problems, and it's not even necessarily that he's 184. It's the build style of his 184. If he was 184 but he was thick, then I could be okay with that. But when you're very slight, it's the same thing as a quarterback. You don't – like when you're slight like that, these dudes are huge in the NFL. That is a big-time shot, especially coming across the middle. That's why I worry about him, so I'll put him as number two. I might change that and put him back as my number one. I don't know. The difference between one and four or five on my receiver board is not big. So, number two, Courtland Sutton. This is the one that everybody's excited to see. People were shocked that he didn't come out last year. He got a lot of TO comparisons a year ago. I didn't see that when I went back and studied his tape. He's a guy who can go up over guys, very physical wide receiver, big guy, almost 6'4", long arms, big hands. I don't think he's got speed, though. I don't think he's got the speed to separate. I think he's going to struggle with that in the pros. He's kind of choppy in his routes. He's not real fluid on his breaks, not real quick on his breaks either. He's pretty good after the catch. He should probably be a little bit better for how big he is, but I'll go ahead and say he does remind me a little bit of Alshon Jeffrey. When Jeffrey was at South Carolina, as that guy that's not going to burn you deep, but he knows how to position himself for the rebound and for the jump ball. He knows how to box you out. So at the very least, he'll come in and be a red zone threat right away. I don't know that I would take Sutton in the first round. I don't think I would, because I really don't think he's going to run. I really don't think he's going to run a good 40 at all. I think he's going to be in the 4.57 type of range. He just does not look fast to me. He does not look fast, and he doesn't look fluid.
Yeah, but he's thicker than Alshon is. You know,
he's only 215.
When I was watching the tape of him, he just, if you talk about the way it's built, right? So Alshon to me is more slight. I think St. Brown is more, for me, it's more Alshon Jeffrey. I don't know. I'm one of those guys. I'm excited about Sutton. I think in this day and age where you need that guy that can go where everybody's big and fast, he can go and just, in a phone booth, he can go get that ball. I only worry about his level of competition. Just playing at SMU is going to be a little bit on it. But he's the one that intrigues me the most, if I'm being quite honest. I like Courtland Sutton.
If you're talking phone booth guy, that's not a number one.
I mean,
for me to call him a number one wide receiver, he's going to have to go out and run at the very highest a low 4.5. If he comes in and runs like a 4.52 or something, I might change my opinion a little bit because his hands aren't the most steady either. So for me, the biggest drills for him are going to be the 40 time, and it's going to be the gauntlet. If he drops two or three in the gauntlet, that's not going to do well for his draft stock because there's a lot of people with a lot of the same questions on him. We mentioned Christian Kirk a little bit earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Kirk is the guy that I think, next to one of my sleepers that I'll get to, Kirk is the guy that I think has the most upside potential of any of these wide receivers because he's a little bit shorter. He's 5'10". He weighed in 5'10", 200, like on the dot 200. But his nickname in college was Baby Beckham, obviously for Odell Beckham. And it was very similar type of tapes in college where, Kirk had some great games and some really good years, honestly, some better years than Beckham had. Similar questions with bad quarterback play. Kirk is almost, if not quite as electric as Odell Beckham in the open field. And you see it in his punt returns all the time. Mm-hmm. Kirk is a home run just waiting to happen. You just got to get the ball in his hands. I wonder if he can take the shots consistently over the middle. He's more thickly built than Ridley, so I feel better about him on that. The number one concern with Kirk is the consistency of his hands. He drops a few too many, and that's the difference, I think, between him and Odell. If I were to roll the dice on one of these receivers in the mid-first round, because I honestly wouldn't take any of these receivers in the top 15, if I were to roll on one of these wide receivers mid to late first round, I think it would be Kirk for the simple fact that he's an elite returner right away. Even if he doesn't become Odell Beckham, he can become a Sterling Shepard fairly easily.
Yeah, and I see that. And I won't throw too many more logs on that fire. That's before I even read that, when I was watching it, that's what it reminds me of. And you're right, that ability to have that third dimension in special teams in the return game, he can provide that spark right out the gate. So, yeah, I like Kirk as well, but I agree. I wouldn't take him in the top 15. Lower first round, maybe second round. And the other piece of it is, it's hard to get the value of your return on any wide receiver, really, unless you get a Randy Moss or something crazy. Because it just takes time for them to learn the pro game when the wide receiver. It's hard to get a good bang on your buck return for your value in the first round on a wide receiver.
Fourth on the list, not fourth on my list, but fourth on most people's lists, DJ Chark. And he's actually a guy that you are very excited to see Courtland Sutton. I am extremely excited to see DJ Chark. You want to talk about a guy that had to deal with the worst possible quarterback situation in college. DJ Chark was one of the best deep threats in college football over the past two seasons. I believe he averaged over 20 yards a catch. Big guy, almost 6'3", about 200 and I think it was about 212, 215, something like that. Long arms, nice hand size, good jumping ability as well. Tracks the ball extremely well over his shoulder, which is what allows him to do so well going deep. DJ Chark is a guy that I think could blow up this combine. There's questions on his true top end speed. I think there's a lot of people suggesting 4.56. I'm not going to be shocked if DJ Chark runs in the 4.46 range, 4.46, 4.47. And if he does, I think DJ Chark could jump ahead of a guy, one of these other top three. If they slip a little bit, I think DJ Chark could jump ahead for the fact that his route tree was a little bit more limited. He did a lot of nine routes, a ton of nine routes, which is the jet down the field, getting vertical. But That's in demand. That's in high demand in the league, especially when you feel you can teach the guy some routes over the course of a year. If you get a team that already has a number one who's getting up there a little bit, or a team like Arizona, by the way, who is eventually going to have to replace Larry Fitzgerald, and John Brown is not a number one in the NFL. DJ Chark is a guy that could do a lot there, and I will be very, very excited to see him run. From what I've seen on his tape, he has good hands. I didn't see him drop too many. He takes contact well. I'm excited. I think he's going to do really well. I've got him right now out of the five that I'm going to mention. I've got him right there with Ridley. I'll have him at three, maybe three or four. Okay. He's right there with Ridley and Kirk for me. I still think Kirk has more upside if he ends up being Beckham, obviously, but I think Chark is the guy that's going to surprise a lot of people.
Yeah, and I don't think you talked about it. It's hard to give him a proper evaluation when Atlanta's his quarterback. I mean,
right?
I mean, I just
it's amazing that he was able to get that many deep balls from a floating guy like Etling.
Yeah, no, agree. I agree with you.
The next one I got, and this is a guy I feel he's criminally underrated. This is my favorite wide receiver in the class, Anthony Miller from Memphis. He's not the biggest guy. He's not the fastest guy. He's got pretty long arms. He's 5'11". About 200 pounds, right at around 200 pounds, 195, 205, somewhere in that range. Anthony Miller's he's just a baller. He is just a gamer. And you wanted to talk about your Antonio Brown for Ridley? This is the guy that I would put that star by. This is the guy that I think could be Antonio Brown. He's got, like Antonio Brown coming out. Antonio Brown's not the fastest wide receiver. Antonio Brown's a 4.5 guy, and he was when he was at the combine. Anthony Miller's going to be that guy. He's probably going to run a 4.51, like right in low 4.5 range, unless he's really been training his butt off. I don't think he's getting into the 4.4s. He's very, very quick. He's great at positioning himself for the deep ball, which is amazing for a guy that's not really tall or really fast. He's a good jump ball guy. Extremely, extremely competitive receiver. Very, very good after the catch as well. Got a surprising amount of power to break some tackles. He will have some focus drops like Antonio Brown will do, or like Antonio Brown would his first couple years in the league. There will be some focus drops on the short passes where he starts getting antsy and starts looking to turn it up the field. He's a guy that's probably not going to go until the third round unless he really blows up the combine. But Anthony Miller is that guy that you guys need to put that star next to.
Yeah, that offense, though, I mean, while it's
I totally get it.
Yeah, it's hard to translate to it, but getting to the point where we can almost say that about most college offenses with the advent of the spread.
Right, most aren't running seven route trees anymore.
No, they're not, and that's why we're trying to get one. I think that's part of the reason why the wide receivers are struggling so much as they come into the league, because it's a whole different ball game. And also for the offensive linemen, you hear scouts talk about how hard it is to get them ready for it because of the same thing. So yeah, I hear you. I've got a couple on mine that I just like. I talked about earlier. I like Brown from Notre Dame, but he just didn't have a throwing quarterback.
Let's talk about St. Brown actually, because I've got him on my steals, and he's just like Anthony Miller. I think Equanimous St. Brown is going to be the best value wide receiver, along with one other receiver I have on my list. Talk about 6'5", 205. You compared him to Alshon Jeffrey. Weight wise, that's pretty good. I see more of Keenan Allen in his game. He's definitely lighter than Keenan. I will be very interested to see what he runs, because I've watched game tape on him, and I honestly have no clue. He could be 4.5. He could be almost 4.6. I really don't know. I think he's going to be closer to 4.5. The thing that's going to push him down boards, and what already has, one, Brandon Wimbush was awful throwing the ball, so he did not get used hardly at all. He's a pretty good blocker for a wide receiver. He's a big body. But this past season, and I don't know if he was just frustrated with the quarterback situation, I went back and watched a ton of his film, and it's hard to find film of him because he didn't get a lot of passes because Brandon Wimbush. but he was not all that aggressive at the top end of his routes. He did not give 100% all the time. I tend to think it's more because he knew that he most likely wasn't getting the ball because this is the quarterback. So I think that has more to do with it. I think once he gets into an NFL, like with an NFL quarterback, I think that changes. St. Brown's a guy that came into the year as like 1B to Ridley's 1A. He's still that guy. He's got good hands. Mm-hmm. He's got big hands. He's a big body. I think he's much more likely than some of these other guys to actually be a number one in the league. I think he'll be very good. And your Jeffrey one, I'm fine with that. I don't have a particular problem with that. I think Jeffrey is a very good comparison for him. I think he's quicker than Alshon. Not necessarily fast, but I think he's quicker, which is why I gave Keenan Allen. Although I would like to see St. Brown be, I'd like to see him be stronger after the catch, honestly. But I think the sky's the limit for him.
Absolutely. So I'll get your take on this one. Simi Cobbs. That game against Ohio State, where he just was torching Denzel Ward, if we want to just be honest. Anybody they put on him, he would just absolutely give them the business.
One-handed, back and forth, like it's nothing.
Yeah. Who do you, so I have somebody I had in mind when I saw him.
Mike
play.
Evans?
Who do you think? Mike Evans is the guy. Yep. That's who I think he is. And if he could be Mike Evans, I mean,
agree. Super underrated guy, too. I'm honestly shocked because he didn't drop a whole lot of passes, and he's going to be slow, just like Mike Evans was. But you're talking about a dude that's 6'3", 6'4", 200, all of 235 pounds, and is a beast after the catch. For him, I think the lateral drills are going to be the most important, because he's not going to run well in the 40. 4.56 is going to be like high end for him. But if he can show off some good, if he can be middle of the road to a little bit better in the lateral drills, I think he'll raise himself up to maybe two rounds, because he's looked at as like a fourth round guy.
Yep. And my last one, and this is just me personal, is Lazar from Iowa State. When they got on that roll there, those 3 weeks in a row, I think they'd be like Oklahoma. I forget the other two. They had two big wins outside of Oklahoma. He was a catalyst. I mean, that quarterback that came in, the quarterback change helped them. But every time they needed a play, he was that guy. And I get it. He's going to be slow. They may have to move into, not an inline tight end, but just kind of flex him out a little bit. But I just kind of like his game. I can't think of a good comp for him, but I just personally like him in the, fourth, fifth round, somewhere in there. And he's just going to come and work, and he's going to show up. And somebody's going to be really glad they got him in the fourth or fifth round. He's not going to blow your socks off. He's not going to be a number one.
I know the comp he's going to have to avoid. The one that a lot of people are going to give him after his Senior Bowl week is going to be Ramsey's Barden. And if you don't know who Ramsey's Barden is, I'll forgive you. I personally don't even remember what college Ramsey's Barden was from, but he was the same type of guy, a 6'6", 240-pound type of guy, big dude, slow as all get out, was expected to be a huge red zone threat, but he couldn't consistently catch the ball. I think Lazard has better hands than Barden. My problem with Lazard is the quickness drills are going to be so important, because he got exposed a lot at the Senior Bowl as a guy that he was getting no separation. Hopefully he's been working on that more than he's been working on his speed, because I'm sorry, getting yourself from 4.65 to 4.6 ain't going to do anything for me. But if you make yourself short area quick or quick out of your breaks, then you can carve yourself out a slot in this league as a possession guy and a red zone target. If he can do that, I agree with you. Per his value, Lazard will be a very good pick.
Those were mine. Go ahead.
I had two. Traquan Smith from UCF, another very, very good deep threat. This is a guy that's probably not going to go until the fifth or sixth round. He actually was the most efficient wide receiver on deep routes over the entire season. Now, when you're coming from an offense like that, you got to be careful, because when I talk about DJ Chark ran a lot of nine routes, it's pretty much all Traquan Smith ran, was get vertical quick and let McKenzie Milton throw it to you deep. I like him. He's a great combination of size and speed, 6'3", 210 pounds, very fast as well. He didn't drop many in college, but I didn't particularly like the way that he caught the balls all the time either. I don't think I could actually call him a hand catcher until I see a little bit more of him in the combine. I think he could be really, really good, or he could be one of these, gimmick type of guys. But I think he'll be pretty good. Not a guy I've got a phenomenal comp with, but I think he'll be pretty good. Hopefully he can be a little bit better than Torrey Smith would be. That'd be what I'm looking for.
Okay.
DJ Moore.
I mean, it's something to hit there.
DJ Moore from Maryland. That's my other one. I am supremely high on DJ Moore. I have been all season. He looks exactly like a former Terrapin in Stephon Diggs. If you remember Stephon Diggs went in the fifth round.
Yep.
And DJ Moore's a guy, I've seen a couple guys who just love him, that have him in the back end of the first round, which is where I would have him personally. I've also seen places where he's third or fourth round. I think he's going to surprise a lot of people here at the Combine. He's going to run in the 4.4s. His lateral agility is going to be outstanding because he's an outstanding return man. He does a really good job on deep passes for a guy that's right at 6 foot, not any taller. Occasionally in that Maryland offense, he would struggle coming back to the ball over a defender, things like that. But also realize that Maryland was on their fifth string quarterback, Max right. Bortenschlager. So I don't fault him for that. And yes, his production fell off a cliff, but that's because Maryland fell off a cliff.
Like, I'm surprised you took anybody from Maryland because I rated
that team, but there's two players on that team that I just loved, and that was Ty Johnson, who came back for his senior year, the running back. I'll talk about him all season, and it's DJ Moore. And I think DJ Moore is going to have a year. I think he's going to be just like Stephon Diggs. Hopefully he can stay consistently healthy, which is something, unfortunately, Stephon hasn't been able to do yet. But I think he's going to be the same type of guy. I think we're going to look up in 3 or 4 years, and it's not going to be Calvin Ridley, and it's not going to be Cortland Sutton. It may not even be Christian Kirk that are the ones that are the studs out of this class. We're going to look, and it's going to be quietly, very quietly, it's going to be DJ Moore.
I can see that. I think that's a good comp. And I mean, I know some people listening may say that's a lazy comp because they went to the same school, but if you look at their production and what they do, I think it's a very good copy. It could be. It's just that Maryland just is Maryland.
And if you don't want to say Stephon Diggs, then you can say Golden Tate as well. And that's another comparison you could do. But he's got better hands than Golden Tate.
Yeah, and again, Golden Tate making a nice living, getting good contracts in the NFL. So, I mean,
$15, $16 million, that ain't bad at all.
Not at all.
The tight ends. Now, this is when I had to stretch this, and I really didn't. I could not find five consistent guy like five consistent ranked in order. They pretty much go like this: Dallas Goedert, he's the guy. Honestly, he's really the only tight end in this class that I would even consider first round. And I don't know if Goedert is going to go first round. He probably should. He definitely should. From what I've seen on his tape, the small school thing in the tight end doesn't worry me. We're really looking for a couple things, especially these type of tight ends. How do you catch the ball? Can you go up over people? Can you get vertical? Goedert can do all of those things. And he did it for a South Dakota State that actually was a really good offense. They have a receiver here, Jake Wynacki, who he could be like this year's version of like a Tanner Gentry, somebody that kind of gets underrated until you start really digging into the tape and seeing it. But Goedert's a guy that reminds me a lot of a Travis Kelce.
Yep.
Not as fast, not quite as athletic because no tight end is. So I also have an Eifert comparison on him, as long as hopefully he can stay healthier than Eifert. But it's the same type of profile. The only thing with Goedert is he's not a good blocker. He'll try, but he's got a long way to go if you want to put him consistently as an inline guy. But I think that the league has moved away enough from that where it's okay for them to split out tight ends, and people have finally figured out, let's make the system work for the player, not the player for the system. I think Goedert is the only one of these tight ends that I'll pick to really contribute year one, because for some reason, tight end is the hardest position to make an actual contribution in the first year.
Yeah, outside of wide receiver, and I agree with you. I mean, there's just really not an emphasis nowadays to have that inline blocking day. I think that's gone. I really do. I think that's gone by the way of the dinosaur. And what's crazy is, people listening to this, I wish I had taken a picture of this and posted it on Twitter so you could see it. I have notes here, and I have, in parentheses, Travis Kelce. And it's just weird that we came to the same conclusion on that guy and have him in the same spot. So I agree with you, and I agree with you in terms of the tight end class. There's nobody that just gets me going like, oh, my God, I can't wait for this guy to be there. Hopefully my team takes him. And Goedert is probably the best one, but I'm with you. I'm not really in love with any of them, to be quite honest, outside of him. And that's almost, you know, trying to make yourself be in love with the fat girl at the end of the night.
Well, no, I really do like Goedert. I think he is the next really good tight end in the league as far as what the league's becoming. But that's it. Like, there's literally not another tight end in this class that I think is going to be even above average as a starter. Number two on everybody else's list, number two on mine as well, Hayden Hurst from South Carolina. He's got a very interesting career. So Hayden Hurst actually was a minor league ball player in the Pirates organization for a while. He came back last year or a couple years ago, decided he wanted to go to college and play football. So enrolled in South Carolina and playing tight end. That's already one knock against him. He's going to be 26 before the season starts, so he's a lot older than these other guys.
Yep.
The thing that Hayden Hurst has going for him is he's the only tight end really in this class that's in the top three or four rounds that is balanced. Hayden Hurst is a pretty good blocker too. Hayden Hurst is going to get a lot of the Hunter Henry talk. He's going to get a ton of, I've got him as an Austin Hooper comparison. As that guy that's balanced, he's not amazing receiving, but he's generally in college anyway, he's not going to hurt you. Now, Hooper's actually been more inconsistent in the pros than he was in college. I think Hurst will settle in as, you know, as an average to slightly above average starter. I'm not saying he's going to be Hunter Henry and be a guy that you imagine is going to get 8 to 10 touchdowns a year. I'm just saying he's that guy that you can put him in line and he's not going to hurt you with his blocking. You can send him down the field on a go route. He's not going to hurt you there, but he's not going to be blindingly fast. He's not crazy athletic. He's just going to be one of those guys that's going to carve out a decently long career without really making a mark.
And once again, like I said, in parentheses, Hunter Henry. And so for everybody, just when you hear what I say that, I'm not in love with them, but I feel like, you know, some guys make the jump, they get coached up. I feel like these people that we're making comparisons to is that who they could be on their, you know, on
right,
their
high
they
end,
are
their
now.
Ceiling.
How the, right.
It's so a lot more boring. It's a lot more boring to do a floor comparison.
Yeah, exactly. So when I say Travis Kelce, don't kill me because Travis Kelce is a stud. And can go there, get there. Yeah, maybe he can, but right now, you know, I just don't have the warm fuzzies about this tight end group. But when I look at them in the tape that I watched of them, that's the comparison I see in the way they move and the way they run their routes and whatnot. So take what we're saying with the grain of salt of not first day come in, that's who they're going to be. But in the right system, putting in the work, getting better, maybe the light switch comes on, and so they figure some things out, they could be there. I had Hunter Henry as well. For Hurst, for all the things he's just laid out.
I thought you were going to yell at me for it or something.
No, I'm going to send you a picture of this. There's one you're going to yell at me for that I have, for what I have next to Corbin Sutton, because it's blasphemous. But when I send you this picture, you'll be like, okay, he was not messing with me. And it'll have a timestamp on it so you know that I wasn't BSing you.
Number three, I've got Mike Gesicki. He's a guy that is – he's for this tight end class, he might be the most athletic tight end in the class. Besides Chris Herndon from Miami. I like parts of Gesicki's game. He just disappeared way too often for me. For a guy that was, you know, it was great that Deshaun Hamilton broke out, who we did not even talk about in the receiver pool. But it's great that Deshaun broke out. But Gesicki should have been a much bigger part of that offense than he was. He's 6'4", he's 240. He's a fast tight end. He's probably going to run in the 4.6s, low 4.7s at the most. He just leaves me wanting. I just don't know if he's that guy. I don't know if it's the routes. I don't know if it is the acceleration. I don't know what it is about Gesicki. I think he's going to be one of these perennial guys that we're going to look at and keep expecting a breakout, and it just doesn't happen. I don't know a great comparison for him. Maybe Jesse James from Pittsburgh. Maybe at the high end I could go. High end, I could maybe see a Kobe Fleener. Maybe
that's who I have.
But that's
the
absolute
that
high end.
You wanting more? That is that not Kobe Fleener?
Right.
The guy you look at and you thought it was like, it's something about you. You should be doing more, especially having Drew Brees. But you're not. That I promise you.
He's had Kobe Andrew Fleener Luck and Drew Brees, and Kobe Fleener hasn't been able to do anything. That's
right.
And I think that's a fair comparison, honestly. I think that's what I expect of him, too. Hopefully I'm wrong. Hopefully Gesicki comes in and shows that he was limited by a quarterback, and he can come into the right system and really show out, because he's got tons of physical attributes that should look good.
Mm-hmm.
Next one is
no,
Mark.
I agree. Go ahead. No, I was going to say, I'm saying it's nuts because we're 3 for 3. No, go ahead. I want you to keep going.
Mark Andrews is the next one from Oklahoma.
Yep.
This is a guy that, quite honestly, will probably be different on the comparison here. I'm not a big fan of Mark Andrews. He could end up really good. He's got that balance like Hurst does. He's not as strong a blocker as Hurst, but he's at least more willing to try it. I don't know how fast he's going to be, so that's going to – I've got a Cameron Brate.
Okay.
I don't know if he's going to quite get there. Maybe a what's his name from Cleveland a couple years ago? He just spent the year out of the league.
Barnage.
Yes, Gary Barnage. Something like that, maybe. if he goes out and he runs like a 4.6, like if he ends up being a lot faster than I think he'll be, then I'd have to change that a little bit. If he can be faster than I'm thinking he'll run, because I'm thinking he's going to be close to a 4.8 type of guy. Mm-hmm. If he goes out and he runs in the 4.6s, then you know he might end up being a little bit better. He might get closer to the Austin Seferian Jenkins mark.
Okay. Yeah, I was gonna say something ridiculous. I like Andrew's game, but I know he also benefited from having Baker Mayfield, so maybe that inflated him. Yeah, I like him, and I know this is gonna be blasphemous. It's gonna be blasphemous, but I put Greg Olsen.
That is crazy.
I think he can be really good. I think he can be really good. I do, but that's high end. I'm not saying again. Everybody listening. You know, you got that quack talking to you.
What would you feel if I said Jason Witten as his high end?
I mean, that's a Hall of Famer. I mean,
well, I'm not talking about being like, I'm not even talking about having that type of career, that long of a career. I'm talking about style. Because style, I think Olsen is a lot more athletic than Andrews.
Andrews, I don't think, is as plodding as Jason Witten. Jason Witten has gotten older and he's more plodding now. But I never.
It is.
He was always good hands, always in the right place, but he's never.
Yeah, he's never really taken off, and he didn't really solidify himself. He's another guy that I kind of expected a little bit more from, because he's a guy that a ton of scouts were pimping his name early in the season before the season started. I was expecting a lot from Andrews. Maybe I was just more disappointed because of that. Maybe I just didn't really catch his biggest games. I watched maybe 3 or 4 of his games. Maybe that was part of it. You could be right. If he ends up, I know there's still a ton of people that are high on him. It's just what I saw. Folks, I'm not. I can be wrong. I've been wrong before. I will be very wrong again. It will happen. It'll probably happen this draft too.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. I could be wrong. Listen, I will come in here and laugh at myself for putting him for that comparison of where he could be again, where he could be. But I think he gets it. You know what I mean? I really do. And again, maybe it's inflated because he had a Heisman. You know, quarterback throwing to him, and other guys we want to big up because they had a bad quarterback. Maybe I'm giving him too much credit because he had that quarterback, right? So there's a gray area in there that we got to kind of navigate as we talk about any pass catchers, because they're only going to be really as good as the quarterback throwing the ball. So I'll put that caveat out there too. We were close. We were 3 for 4. You know, blind doing our own. Kind of looking right at it in comparison, but you know, I do. I just like Andrew's game. I think he could be a really good tight end at the next level.
And it'd be good if he ends up being what a lot of people thought, because I don't wish bust on almost anybody unless you're a Florida player, and then I do hope you bust. are there any tight ends in this class that like you've got as sleepers? I've got two. Chris Herndon from Miami. A very, very athletic guy who was very consistent. He never really got to be the main guy because he got hurt this year before he could really take off. Before he got hurt, he was really starting to make some strides. He was starting to jump up a few people's boards. He's probably going to be in the 4th or 5th round because he was buried behind David Njoku last year or the year before last. He's got a good size. He's got good blood. He's got good bloodlines. He's got good hands as well. He actually had to play the inline role because Njoku was just not a good blocker at Miami. So when you're talking about a guy that could come out of this class and consistently and be much better in the NFL than he was in college, I think Herndon could be that. I think he could be a good value, maybe a Ladarius Green type, even though it hasn't come together for Green because of injuries. He's not as fast as Green. But that's the type of guy, somebody who can be a consistent mismatch in the passing game. And then I've got Jordan Thomas from Mississippi State. And this is a dude where if he gets drafted, it's not going to be until the 5th or 6th round. He might go undrafted. But if it's me and you're playing, you've got a compensatory pick. Like your Bengals always have a ton of of comp picks. If they have a comp pick in the 5th round and they're looking at a tight end because they're not going to bring back Eifert and they don't like CJ Uzomah, because why would you? Jordan Thomas is a guy. Listen, he played wide receiver, so he's converting from receiver to tight end. So that should let you know that his blocking is a work in progress. But listen, I mean, he's 6'5", 280. He's the biggest tight end out of any of these that we've talked about. I cannot wait to see what he runs. I don't know if he got a combine invite or not. I hope he did. I'll have to check that after the show. But if he can run in the 4.7s, I'd take a flyer on him in the 5th round.
Yeah, and no, I hear you. And, you know, listen, I try not to be homerish because I don't think I'll put anybody from Ohio State in my picks, but I like Marcus Ball. I just don't think I think he was miscast in that offense with a quarterback in JT. And you heard me talk ad nauseum about him not being a for real quarterback. He's a runner playing quarterback. But, you know, he's a decent blocker. I think he's a decent to good blocker. He's not great. He's not going to wow you necessarily with great speed, but he's reliable. And that's what I like about him. And when I look at him, somebody else said, you know, reliable, not overly athletic, overly fast, but had a good career. Antonio Gates. I think he could be Antonio
Gates had an amazing career. What are you talking about?
Yeah, but I'm talking about, but he didn't. But Antonio Gates wasn't the most athletic tight end. He wasn't the fastest tight end. But he was. I wasn't saying he had a bad career. I'm saying Marcus Ball, if he gets to 80% of Antonio Gates, that's who my comp will be for him in terms of the way he carries himself on the field, the way he can be a good blocker, the way he can be in the right place when you need him. He can convert those crucial third downs and be a red zone target. I mean, because for a long time, Antonio Gates was Phillip Rivers' security blanket. I think Ball can be that for a quarterback. You just don't show that always game plan for him, but he shows up and he plays big for you. That's me. Like you said, it's going to be mid to late rounds. I'm not saying, oh my God, you got to take this guy in the second round because you'd be an idiot. And as much of a homer as I am, I'm not going to tell you to take Marcus Ball in the second round.
By the way, Jordan Thomas did get a combine invite, so I'm going to be able to watch and see what he runs.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, again, I think we're not grasping at straws. I mean, we're trying to do a proper evaluation of the tight end class. It's just that, you know, there's no Jimmy Graham, you know, sitting out there like, you know what, that dude there is just, and then Jimmy Graham is still a converted basketball player. So, I mean, it's still, I don't know, dude. It's not really a tight end anymore. It's not because it's not an inline.
That's true. I mean, you're pretty much
flexing out.
You look at Evan Engram. I mean, I believe he only played like 23% of his snaps as a tight end.
Right. Exactly. And I think he can be really good when he gets Shepard and OBJ out there to carve some space over the middle for him. But asking him to be an inline, you know, three down blocking tight end is not who he is. It's not who most of these guys are. That's just not what the game is anymore.
I agree with you. And if you're going to get one thing that booms, another one has to bust. So this could be kind of the end of the tight ends as we know them. The days of the Kellen Winslows are probably done, at least for a while,
right,
until it circles back around and you get more to a ground and pound style of game. We are fast out of time. I just wanted to get one more thought that we didn't talk about before we got on, and I'd be remiss if we didn't talk about it. Jalen Ramsey in a Twitter fight, as he's wont to do. Jalen likes to fight on Twitter. It's like 90% of what he does on Twitter. But Texas A&M put out something, and it was one of the assistant coaches. Brewster, is that his name maybe? I don't know. Jim Brewster, I was thinking was his name. I could be wrong. Put out a tweet talking about basically running down the silhouettes and the names of the Florida State DBs that have gotten in the league. So Jalen Ramsey, it'll be Tavares McFadden and Derwin James this year, Ronald Darby, a few others who I can't believe I'm missing someone, but there's a few other. Florida State basically has been a very good DB factory lately. And Jalen Ramsey claps back as, Jimbo didn't teach me nothing about being a DB. He didn't teach me a single DB positioning, which, duh, Jimbo's an offensive coach. I just want to get your take on that because it really only goes one of two ways. Like, there's no kind of middle ground on this.
Yeah, and we talked about it a little bit before the show. I mean, I get it for him because I don't want to see my likeness being used to recruit to another school that I didn't go to for a coach that wasn't a defensive coach that probably didn't even watch me practice, you know, more often than not. He was worried about the offense and he kind of let the defensive coordinator do his thing with me. So I'm like, come on, bro. Like, yeah, you were my coach and you recruited me and I agreed to come play for you. Don't get me wrong. Yes. And being part of the program helped me get to the NFL. But I think Jalen Ramsey was a stud enough to wherever he went.
Right. I think he was going to go NFL no matter where he played.
Right. But I get it. I don't want to see another school use my likeness to get people to come there when I'm probably still actively trying to get those dudes to go to my school. You know what I mean? So I get it, but it's just the way that Jalen goes about his business that rubs people the wrong way.
And, you know, I get that whole likeness thing. I think if he had just said, hey, don't use my likeness to get somebody to go to A&M, I'd have been okay. It was the shot that he took at Jimbo. Like, I get it. Florida State fans and former players are pissed at the way Jimbo left, and they should be. It was a total Bush League way to leave. But like with our friend from – Washington, D.C., when you start going overboard with it, it starts saying more about you than the person that you're saying it about. And that's, to me, that's what it is. To start doing the, he didn't teach me any DB positionings. Well, most head coaches don't. That's why they have DBs coaches and defensive coordinators. I mean, they don't teach every player every position. And if you're going to say that Jimbo's not a good coach, that's just stupid. And Jalen didn't say that. But, like, you didn't go to play for Kansas. You didn't go to play for Bill Snyder, did you? No. Okay, so it actually meant something that Jimbo Fisher was the head coach at Florida State.
Yeah, no, agreed. I agree with Sam, but I understand what he was saying, but he went too far. And that's where Jalen loses people.
Just pick your battles, man. That is
because
you're one of the top two corners in the NFL. Just pick your battles.
But even when you pick your battles, there's always a way to battle. Everything doesn't have to be a knife fight to the death. You know what I mean? Like, you can say that and then not take the shot at Jimbo. Like, you know what? Come on, man. I'm Florida State. Don't use me to recruit to go to Texas A&M. Come on. Don't do that. If he had said that and stopped, I think people would have understood a lot better. Like, yeah, I agree.
He'd have been completely fine. It would have been well within his rights there. It's just when you go overboard and you just sound like the jilted ex-lover, and that's not what we look for, and that's not what we look for here on Shell Shocked. So I'm sorry, folks.
Right.
Before we get all up in your ears too much, we are going to have to end the show this week. Next week, we'll have some actual combine numbers to discuss. Anybody that stands out, because you know there's somebody that just goes plum crazy at the combine. Could be Kalen Ballage. Could be Nyheim Hines. It's going to be Saquon Barkley. So we're going to come back next week, and we're going to have a ton of fun stuff to talk about. I believe next week, sure. I think we'll skip the old line for a little bit because, sorry, Big Uglies, you're important, but I don't want to talk about you next week. So we'll probably do the defensive linemen, the defensive ends, and the defensive tackles. We'll get that out of the way for you next week. Everybody out there, okay. Make sure you're subscribing to us on iTunes, on SoundCloud, on CastBox. Make sure you're following us on Twitter, at DylanXShort, at RichTheHomieJQ. Make sure you check out my new Braves podcast, the Platinum Sombrero. I promise you'll enjoy it.
I love the name.
I promise you'll enjoy it. I'm going to get working and see if I can get a special guest in here next week. No promises, but if I can, it will be an extremely fun show. It'll be like it was this week. We'll probably only talk college football next week. So everybody out there, I'll have this cut up and ready. This is a Thursday night. All of you guys have a great night out there. Have a great weekend. Be safe and be fun. And I will hit you guys up next week.
Come out, and all that counts is here and now. My universe will never be the same. I'm glad you came. I'm glad you came.